You're listening to 66.6 FM, Radio TOVH, The Flush.
Just hit record on this conversation, and I go through and I edit everything after we record, and remove any parts that make me seem dumb. Mostly, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the show Matt of Slugadig. I believe that's how it's pronounced. Is that correct?
No. Slugge.
Sorry, say
just
that again.
It's easy. Slugge.
Slugge. Just easy like that. Slugge. Yeah. Okay. I believe that you hold the distinction of being our first international guest on this show as well.
I believe so.
That's got to be right, isn't it, 365?
That is correct.
In preparation for this, I've been working on expanding my repertoire of increasingly offensive accents for cultures and nationalities.
All right, yeah, go on then.
What's all this then? It's Sludge, the greatest fucking metal band on earth. How about that?
Yeah, but you sound a bit like a southerner there. It's not quite got the same, dulcet tones as we do in the north.
I mean, I am a
southerner. It's not bad, though. It's not bad.
I'm a southerner, though. I think it's swapped for you guys. Here, southerners are looked down on as kind of being rural trash, and it's the opposite in the UK, right?
Yeah, it's the other way around. We're the scum in the north because it's grim up north, and down south, they're all the sort of like the Norman elite, you know?
The posh city boys.
Yeah, that's the way, yeah.
Well, that would be what 365 is, right?
I'm a Yankee, so you probably both hate my guts.
Well, I'm so stoked to have you on the show. You've been a friend of the toilet for a long time, and this is the first time that we've ever actually got a chance to interview at all. So thanks for doing this. You've got a new record coming out, and I actually
well, it's not new. It's the three old ones, but yeah,
the three old ones all collected together and available on vinyl for the first time, right as well.
Yeah, well, it's Dim and Slime Ridden Kingdoms, the last album we did. That's Willow Tip done that on vinyl. They gave me an option, and I picked the latest one. They said we could do Gastronomic on, but I thought, nah, people aren't going to want that. But yeah, apparently loads of people have said, why didn't you do Gastronomicon? So, yeah. But maybe in future, I don't know.
Gastronomicon was my introduction to you guys when that came out, and I think it was 2014. And the thing that I took away from it is this is really, really good, and this is really, really strange, this band's predilection towards slimy creatures. It's kind of your thing, man. And I just want to learn a little bit about how that came to be. When did you first discover your fascination with slugs and snails and such?
Well, it's a bit of a boring story, really. We just kind of I don't know what we were doing. I think we might have been drunk or something like that. We were just discussing sort of music, really. And I can't remember what we brought up exactly. It was something along the lines of like these sort of sludge bands have they call themselves, there's that Iron Monkey and Abominable Iron Sloth and all that. And I think my dog's growling at me now for some reason. I've already fed you, stop. We were like, why isn't there one about slugs? Like Sludge. And that was literally how we came up with it. Anyway, we decided not to do sludge metal in the end because, if Metallica can be called Metallica and make fucking like hard rock, then...
Why can't we be?
Get wrecked.
Yeah, no, you know what I mean. When I was younger, they were like a proper metal band.
They invented
the old thrash metal, so there you go. But it's they moved away from that, didn't they? And now they're sort of trying to go back into it now, aren't they?
Well, from this silly, possibly drunken joke with wordplay, you've developed a mythology for your band that seems to grow with each release. You have to have some joy in writing about this. What does it for you here?
It's just, I don't know, some, you know, like, I like it and everything. I enjoy writing it. It's really fun. We'd always done sort of stupid bands where we were just kind of taking the piss a little bit and just messing about. And then we realized that at some point, because we kept trying to do all this sort of political stuff, you know, and like I was at the time, I was in like a crust band, I suppose you would call it, like punk, you know, a hardcore, and I'd done grindcore bands and all that, because I mean I really like grindcore, and that wasn't working out for us, so we thought, well, let's just sort of give up on trying to do anything with music and just for fun. I know it sounds really sort of contrived, the stuff that we've done before, but we were really fed up, so we just wanted to do things for fun. And so we just said, well, we'll just do something silly, and that's exactly what it is. But it's fun to write, but at the same time, sometimes you get up in the morning, you look at yourself in the mirror, and you think, like, this is the band that, you know, people paid attention to. Sludge is a ridiculous name, and we can't change it now, but, you know, that's what it is.
I don't know what you're talking about at all. That seems like a strange, silly thing to worry about as I work on the toilet of hell.
Yeah, no. I saw in comments someone was on about this the other day, and it's like, you know, it was on Toilet of Hell, and someone was like, you're on a blog called Toilet of Hell. You're just telling me about the name Sludge for. But it is, I mean, it's... I don't know, it's weird, because, I've never taken myself too seriously, and neither has Kev, but, I don't know, there's just a kind of, I think it was just that moment that we knew it was right to just let it go and just stop trying to, you know, make this, that, and the other, and just make whatever the hell we wanted to make, and, you know, that's the way it's gone. My dog's wandering around trying to get something off a plate. Come here. So,
yeah. And it's worked out. You work with you know, a big label. How did you get hooked up with Willowtip?
They just sent me a tweet saying I need to speak to you, and I was like, you know, it was really silly stuff, and I didn't think anyone would bother with us like that, because we were, you know, we were just putting stuff out for free. We didn't really care about. You know, at first I didn't care about making CDs, because I thought no one's going to want this stuff. It's just something fun for people to have, you know, download it. We put effort into it, you know what I mean? We went out of our way to get Almar and all that. It wasn't just some, you know, like, it meant something to us, but we didn't think it would do anything. And so Willowtip sent me this tweet, and I was on holiday, and I sort of like deleted the email out of my thing, not looking. So, you know, unless it said like from Bandcamp, so unless it was like a fan thing, most of which I miss anyway, I deleted it. So I messaged them back like months later and said, oh, that, did you email me or something? Because I deleted the thing. And they were like, well, so we'll resend it. And it was, it was Jason. He was like offering us a 2-album deal. And I was like, that's stupid. Why the hell? Why would you do that? You know, but it's you know, it's their funeral. No, I'm joking. It was great. Yeah.
So yeah, I guess that should be a message for bands. You should maybe check your social media messages. It could be a label knocking down your door. I mean, it almost certainly is not, but it could be.
Well, you know, if it's, I suppose. I don't know. I think it's just, you know, like people have asked me as well, like, you know, how did you get to do that before and all that sort of stuff. And I just say it's just pure luck, I think. I don't know. I think it's luck. I think it's luck, and I think it's just wasting your time doing stuff for so long and just not giving up at it because, it, you know, it's and, you know, they sort of, they message you eventually. Hopefully.
There you go.
Certainly wasn't looking for it, though.
You know, a few months back, I uncovered this thing from the Earache forums about this Morbid Angel limited release of Domination, which they put out slime packs.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I can't think of a more appropriate band to bring that back. I mean, obviously, with the case of Earache putting out the slime packs, it was incredibly corrosive, and I believe that they were eventually an ecological disaster. So there might be a better way of doing it. But what do you say for your next release? Are you considering any kind of special edition slime packs, maybe?
Well, you've got me concerned now. I'm looking up at the soundtrack to The Apocalypse by Slayer, which is on my shelf, and I'm thinking they have a blood pack in that. So what are you saying about them being corrosive?
I think I might have
something just ecologically dangerous sitting up there now.
It's probably fine.
Yeah, it's probably fine. I'll open it and I'll just get terrible burns everywhere, so it'll explode. But if theirs worked, I'm sure that, you know, we could do that maybe. But I don't know. It seems like an expensive thing, doesn't it? Packaging slime up, and I'm cheap. I'm all about efficiency. No, I suppose I'd have to ask the label. Really, maybe next album. You never know.
Digby, you know, let them know that you're interested in doing the slime pack, and tell them that you'd prefer not to, you know, burn holes into warehouses if it punctures, or if maybe you would. I don't know.
If you can't do that idea, another thing you could package going with the slugs and the slime motif is packages of salt.
That might be offensive to Mollusca, wouldn't it?
Just have people at your shows throwing salt at each other, just trying to shrivel up. No.
Matt, are you there? Oops, I think we lost him.
I think I offended him.
You may have, dude. Like, it's not cool to salt. It's not cool to salt somebody.
There we go. I thought I said a bad word. And
sorry,
got
no,
rid
I,
of you.
I accidentally pressed my button and it went off. it's dangling on a string. It's stupid. Yeah, salt. Yeah, that's like a weapon. So we can't really be packaging that in. We did have an idea of putting live slugs in things, but that's cruelty to animals. It's, you know, I'm pretty sure that we would have people all over our case for doing that.
That seems pretty work intensive too, finding and then packaging slugs one by one.
Yeah, and they're absolutely crawling with parasites. It wouldn't be good. They have things like that, like schistosomiasis and things. You know, they kill like 200,000 people a year or something. So it wouldn't be.
Wait,
it just
really?
Wouldn't be on. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. They're deadlier than sharks. People keep telling me. They keep saying slugs aren't metal. Well, for one, there are snails which are made of actual metal that live under the sea. Right. So that's one thing. And they're wiping us out. They're pretty hardcore. So I don't really understand that argument that people keep leveling at us.
I think it's that people in metal lack creativity. There's an obsession with one or two things, like, I don't know, dragons and wolves, and then they discount everything else because
wolves are pretty sick.
I mean, they're okay. They're not that sick, to be honest with you, but
they're pretty sick. It's just if it's all Nazi stuff, which it usually is when it's covered in wolves, then I'm not interested in that. But they're nice. I mean, I like dogs. They're just like dogs, aren't they?
Yeah, so, I mean, they could be cuddly.
Yeah.
Or rip your face off.
Yeah, K9ers did that, didn't they? They had dogs singing on their album.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they like to fought with one of my dogs. They like to fought with my dog today. I was chuffed. I mean, forget all these other, you know, rubbing shoulders with famous people. K9ers liked one of my dog's photos. He's really, he's chuffed, aren't you, Ted?
What kind of a pup is he?
He's a border collie.
Excellent choice.
Too intelligent for his own good. Keeps trashing my house.
Yeah, he's just doing calculations in his head, figuring out the optimal way to get food off your plate.
Yeah. Well, he's distracting me now in an interview thing, podcast, and I asked him not to. Could you come up here, please? Oh, fine. Forget it, then.
There are very few things that we'll tolerate on the show, you know, interrupting the flow of things. But I think doggies coming in, that's fine. That's totally fine.
Yeah.
One of my favorite things that your band does is your album tracks are generally slime themes on existing metal tracks, at least the title is. For example, yeah, Salters of Madness for Morbid Angel's Altars of Madness. I really enjoy that. Is that something that you plan on doing with your future releases? How long can you possibly keep that up?
I don't know. We will do, though. It's just, I don't know. It's just something we did with the first one, and it feels like you can't, you know, I don't really want to stop doing it now. It's just that's the way it is. It's like a little bit. I mean, in the music, there's like a Ted Packardin. In the music, there's like a nod to our influences, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And it's kind of the same thing with some of the song titles. I mean, we don't worship bands, but we're not so, you know, we don't think we're being like massively original. We're just sort of doing what everybody does, building on their influences, and we really don't mind sort of saying what they are, and that's all it is, really. It's just not some people have said that, you know, like said, oh, you know, the puns really put me off and stuff like that, and I'm being very negative tonight, but it's like it needn't do. You don't have to let that go.
Don't let these negative people in your life.
Yeah, I know.
The puns are delightful, and I would like more. What I dig about your band is that it's fun and that you've got good music and a theme that most people wouldn't touch because they want to use the same tired iron crosses that everybody else uses, because it's dangerous to step outside what everybody else does. You open yourself up to ridicule by not copying the guy next to you.
Yeah, but we're all right with ridicule. I mean, you know, we're totally. I'm saying it. Keep bringing it up like it offends me. It really doesn't. I mean, it's just. It's not to be edgy or anything. It's just, you know, trying to be needlessly comedic. It's just what we're like. We're not going to change doing what we've been doing because we're just. That's what we've always done. So, yeah, I mean, it doesn't need to. Not that I've got. I mean, I don't. You know, loads of the bands I listen to, it's just all about Satan or Cthulhu or something. Those are the bands I really love, and I love the sort of, you know, the artsy fartsy ones as well. That are a bit, you know, kind of. You know, like your Deathspell Omega and your Gorguts and stuff like that, and love those bands. But it's just what we do, and that's all it is. That's all there is to it. And you know, you either like it or you hate it. If you hate it because of the surface elements, though, I would argue that's probably, you're going to restrict yourself if you do that. You should just listen to the music.
Yeah, don't be
and
a
if,
fucking.
And if you still hate it, then fair enough. Yeah.
Don't be a fucking poser. Get into it.
Mm. Exactly. Yeah.
So.
Well, be a bit of a poser. You know, that's just the way metal is. You know, metal isn't. I find metal inherently silly. Sorry if people are offended by that, but I think it's a silly kind of music that's sort of, it's a bit ridiculous. I don't dislike that. Obviously, that's what I actually like about it. It's crazy.
You know, that's what Lemmy of Motorhead said as well, that it was all kind of silly, and that you generally don't get in the business of, you know, metal or rock and roll if you're not kind of a poser and not into like dressing up and being, you know, silly with it.
Oh yeah, of course. I mean, I have the patch jackets and the studs and all that, and you know, the bullet belt and stuff. I mean, I don't wear it so much now, but it's the same. You know, it's your battle attire that you go out to gigs in. I mean, it's to outsiders it looks fairly ridiculous, but that's in the essence of what we're all sort of about. You don't have to be either. That's the thing. You don't have to do all that, but some people do, and there's absolutely no need to, you know, criticize anyone for it, unless it's, you know, like some band that's clearly making a cash grab. We don't like that, do we?
So one of the things that 365 and I like to, you know, yell at each other about is politics. Generally, we restrain ourselves to what we know, and which is very little, shockingly little. But we think we know a little bit about U.S. politics. I wanted to get your opinion on what's going on in the U.K. right now.
What's going on in the U.K.? Political. Right. Right. So I think there's some parallels to be made. I won't go to, because it's not really my place to go into sort of U.S. politics, not being from there. But I do keep up on it. And I think there's quite a lot of parallels to do with the sort of the Trump phenomenon with the, what happened with Brexit. And it's kind of, to me, it's just, it's like a, I don't want to get too serious, but it's like a rejection of, I mean, you've heard it all before, it's a rejection of sort of globalization and the sort of neoliberalism and all that. And I think it has a lot to do with the 2008 financial crash as well, stuff like that. And people are just bitter, there's jobs being taken away, so they're lashing out at things. And my personal opinion is that they're lashing out at the wrong thing with the sort of Europe issue, because people are, you know, leading up to this referendum thing, it was a fringe thing, right? And it was immigrants, and we'd been hearing on, like, I heard this thing on Fox News, you probably heard it, where they're like, in America, where they're like saying, oh, you know, it's been taken over by Muslims and people like that in Birmingham and other places, and it's completely run by them, which is a lot of nonsense, you know what I mean? It's Birmingham being a big metal place as well. We've played gigs there and stuff, and actually, horrifically, one of the gigs we did play there, we ended up playing like a, accidentally ended up playing like a neo-Nazi thing, which was horrendous for me because I'm quite left-leaning.
I recently saw The Green Room. That could have put you in a dangerous spot if it's anything like that film.
Oh, I've not seen the film.
TLDR, leftist punk band, ends up playing a neo-Nazi dive bar to make gas money to get back home. Violence happens.
All right. Well, it was getting a bit heated because all these sort of what I assume are like Muslims and sort of there were sort of minority groups present at this thing, but then afterwards they were all sort of drinking together and I didn't get it. So I think I'm just been like, because I'm from like a small village and I have. It was a sort of a bit of a shock, like a culture shock thing. It wasn't really like about, you know, they were on stage, they were doing like Zeke Heil and all this sort of stuff, and then they were sort of drinking with these people that they were, you know, sort of against afterwards, what it seemed like. So I didn't really get it, but I'm getting a little bit off topic anyway. All I'm saying, it was the same as the thing in the perceptions that this was happening in the major cities, it is in some places like London, there are a lot of foreign people in London, but a lot of the areas that voted for the Brexit thing weren't the places that were affected by these things, and I think it has more to do with people sort of are discontented with the government. However, I think it was misplaced anger, because it's leading up to the referendum for about a few months before it, suddenly there was all this, we don't want to be controlled by unelected bureaucrats, technocrats in Brussels. And I thought, well, this hasn't been an issue at all until now. Do you know what I mean? This is the first time I'm hearing about it. So, I don't know. It just seemed like a fake outrage. And I started to sort of, I mean, I didn't really get the sense of that from what was going on in America. I honestly don't know. I think that because I'm not from there, so I can't speak on it, and I'm not actually, I'm still for sort of things that I've done in the past, I'm still not actually allowed into America. I have to get speak to the embassy if I want to be allowed in. But it's, I know what it's like in Europe because I go around Europe, you know, and meet lots of different people. But I can only assume it was a similar thing that was happening in America. You know, I was eagerly watching the election thing because for whatever you think of these people, it was massively entertaining.
Oh yeah, definitely.
And it seemed like a lot of the sort of major cities on the East and West Coast were sort of for one thing and sort of middle America was for another. And I just saw the same kind of, incidentally, it was the people that voted for Brexit on by and large were from my area in the north. And I was a little bit sort of annoyed at first, but I'm trying to sort of understand what had gone on. I mean, some people are saying, you know, it's a clear blow against globalization, but I'm sort of in the camp of, well, you're not going to stop it. You're not going to stop any of it. And to be progressive is not about sort of whining about things. It's going along with things and just trying to make the best of a situation that is beyond your control. And that was my opinion. And a lot of the stuff that sort of Trump was saying, I just thought he's trying to control something he can't control.
Yeah, in terms of globalization, that bottle has been uncorked and it's not going to come back.
Yeah, I mean,
you're not going to be able to put it back in.
If you relate it to metal, I mean, something that we're talking about, that culture, sort of heavy metal, and I know now from selling albums to people and sending albums to, like, you know, Saudi Arabia and Syria and places, and Indonesia and places all around the world, China, Japan, America, that's a global culture. And it's something that between us in America and the UK and Europe, it kind of started there, you know what I mean? So we've exported that, and we've exported a lot of things around the planet. And the sort of one of the main weapons that's been used against the sort of the globalists, if you like, has been the internet, which is the ultimate tool of globalization. You know, it's the thing that's sort of connected the world. So it's like the master's tools are being used to dismantle the master's house. But I don't think that it'll happen. And I think that people who try and do that, who try and resist and fight something which isn't, it's not as insidious, it's just a thing, it's not like an insidious, it's not like a group of people like, you know, your Alex Joneses will tell you. It's just people trying to manage society all around the world and manage what's going on. And I think if you try and fight that, it will bite you in the ass.
I don't know, I'm a regular listener of Alex Jones, and he has assured me the globalists are causing all kinds of ills across the world, including, I believe they are making frogs gay now, so...
you know, I really hate myself, because I watch it all the time, because I find him so entertaining.
This fucking guy's from where I live, like the same city.
Is he?
He is, yeah, he... I've never met him. My coworker did. He told me that his head was the size of a pumpkin, like a large pumpkin, and that's pretty much all I've taken away from him.
Yeah. I think people like him are quite dangerous, but you can't stop them from speaking their mind, because then you're worse then, you know. But like, yeah, he has, it's a bit like a cult thing, and I kind of watch in sort of bemusement, but like sort of terror as well, as he sort of goes on about these plots all this sort of stuff, and I just can't. I mean, if I was in a punk band, and it was all like, I mean, and I've believed some pretty wacky things in my time, I won't go into, but I've, like many young people, I chop and change between you know, different ideologies quite with ease, with rapidity. And back then I might have started, you know, opening my mouth on it, but now I'm just, I talk about slugs. I mean, there's a message of unity in a lot of the things that I write about, but it's usually from a position of if you're not unified, we're gonna destroy you from a slug perspective, you know, sort of war on humanity via, you know, destroying the agricultural infrastructure of their countries by eating all their lettuces or something like that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I get that, and you know, in ways, your ideology of making people band together with the slugs or be destroyed does have parallels with Ben Franklin's, you know, original statement of join or die to form the original Union of the United States. So, you know, even though that you're a UK band, you obviously have parallels within science fiction and historically American politics. So. You're anti-intellectual or anything like that.
No, and that's another thing that's that worries me about this whole thing. Without trying to sound like there can be a problem of when you say it's anti-intellectuals. You know, this is anti-intellectualism, and I've said this, and I needed to qualify what I was saying. It's not that everyone's stupid. It's just that. We cannot look at things about our ideology and twist facts. Because one of our things in our band, just to clarify what I'm saying, a lot of it's about sort of environmental stuff, sort of under the surface of it. There's a lot of environmental stuff in it because I used to be, I wouldn't say hardcore, like, you know, like Earth Liberation Front hardcore. I was quite concerned with environmental things when I was younger, and I still am. And I used to sort of, you know, keep a lot of animals and all the rest of it for that were having their habitats destroyed and all that. This stuff about the global warming thing, this climate change, we know the consensus. Yeah, that is anti-intellectualism. You cannot just take the word of, you know, Lord Monckton or, you know, any of these other people that comes out and says, oh, well, the numbers are wrong. No, his numbers are wrong. And you can't twist facts to fit the ideology. Like, I get that, you know, in essence, libertarianism and sort of minarchism and all that kind of stuff is, in its pure sort of form, and ideally it would be great, but we can't twist things just to sort of make it fit with our thing. It'd like be me sort of, you know, saying, you know, well, communism would be fine, you know, it's just that no one did it right, you know. No, it's, there are lots of big gaping, you know, massive flaws in these systems. We can't really be going back, we have to look forward.
Lawnmont Potion Castle, a guy who does has for many years done these absurd, crazy albums of prank phone calls, has described his work as saying, like, it's dumb, but it's not stupid, which he means it's a little bit playful, it's a little bit out there, but there is a reason behind everything that he's doing, and I kind of get the same thing with what you're saying about your music.
Yeah, I like to think so. No, it's not... There's a thing going on there, but it's, at the end of the day, it's kind of just catharsis, because, you know, I've spoken about it a lot before. I've had a lot of problems which have meant that getting to the stage where I'm now, where I can just sort of relax and be all right, has been a sort of a long road, and I have to be sort of super careful with stress because I've had a lot of mental health issues and all the rest of it. So a lot of it is just cathartic as well, trying to keep myself sane, even though it seems like a lot of it's sort of insane rambling. And it's almost like a play on that, really. It's a bit of a joke, you know. Like, it's and it's probably why I sort of watch a lot of this from an outside perspective, watch a lot of this conspiratorial stuff as well, you know, like tinfoil hat kind of stuff, is that how crazy it looks from the outside compared to, you know, from when I was very much a paranoid sort of delusional person in the past. And so that whole space aliens thing, you know, like things controlling my mind from outside there, it all has a, there's all a point to it. It's all something that's relevant to me, and it's relevant to Kev as well, you know, because he's been into all that as well.
Thanks so much for joining us. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
Folks, from time to time, we do a video series in that we agree to watch a movie, and then we talk about it on the air. And the last episode, I told you all to watch a movie that's, quite frankly, I apologize. It was difficult to get through, and I knew it was going to be difficult to get through, but it would be a learning experience for all of us. And that learning experience is called Last Ounce of Courage. It was a 2012 movie directed by Daryl Campbell and Kevin McAfee, because a piece of art this great needs two people to direct it, in which we learn a little bit about standing up for what's right. And what's right is calling Christmas Christmas. If you call it something else, you might be a communist. 365, did you enjoy the movie?
Before I get into the movie, I have a question for you.
Yes.
Why do you hate me?
It's not that I hate...
The only reason you would suggest this movie is because you hate me and everyone else to make them watch this.
Okay, so a friend of mine made me watch this a couple of years ago, and I don't think I've ever been so mad watching a piece of media in my life. So naturally, when I was given the opportunity to assign a film to people, I wanted them to feel what I felt. You know, not everything can be sunshine and roses and funny metal movies. Sometimes we've got to get into something that makes you feel things that you're not quite comfortable with, like searing, blistering rage and hatred.
I was mad literally from the first second of this movie. The first second.
Yes, with good reason, because the film opens up with a goddamn Ronald Reagan quote about freedom, which is a good indicator that you're about to be treated to a deluge of fascist bullshit. And yeah, spoiler, you are.
The production company for this movie is called Veritas Entertainment, and Veritas means freedom. It's also the word of choice for people like James O'Keefe with his Project Veritas, where they try to selectively edit and do sting operations on left-leaning programs and groups and politicians to get them fired from their jobs or try to expose whatever little horrible thing they think is going on. So immediately I'm pissed off with this movie.
As you should be. So let's just go ahead and get into this. You're treated to this Ronald Reagan quote, which sets the tone. We immediately know what we're going to get into. And then you see a man driving his motorcycle with a giant American flag waving in the breeze on the back of his bike. He's not wearing a helmet because he's not a cuck. He is a strong American man. That man is called Bob Revere, because we're incapable of nuance with conservative media. This is played masterfully by Marshall Artigue, our lead role, Bob Revere. This guy has actually been in a number of things that you've probably seen. The Rock, Armageddon, Roadhouse. But none of those great movies can ever redeem him for what he has done with this film.
I'm disappointed they went with Revere and not just Bob America or Bob Freedom.
Bob Patriot would have been better, personally.
Bob Constitution.
he is voicing over himself while he's riding a sweet hog, saying, "I always saw myself as a patriot. I don't remember anyone telling me that freedom had to be fought for. Blah, blah, blah. There's no greater love in the world than a man laying down his life for someone else." This is a little funny, in that Bob plays a Vietnam vet, and his son is an Afghanistan vet. So these are both wars that these men fought to basically not save American freedom. It was instead to perpetuate American imperialism. I apologize for nothing with that statement. So already we're discounting American history and just getting ourselves right to the quick of it. He continues by saying, "Thomas was only 20. He had his whole life ahead of him. Young wife, great friends." This is a bit of foreshadowing. Thomas Revere, his son, is obviously not going to make it. We're taken to a flashback of Thomas, his wife, going off to war, his wife having a baby, and then dying. And it's very sad and very tragic. And then we immediately fast forward 14 years into the future, after Thomas has been dead for 14 years, and Bob Revere is working in a pharmacy. And what is the greatest scene in this entire movie? If you're going to watch this, you're going to want to watch this first 5 minutes so you can see this. And that a bunch of bikers show up to the pharmacy and go talk to Bob, and one of them has a deep bullet wound in his gut. And Bob immediately offers to fix him up, because, you know, he's a biker. They're both bikers. You got to have, you know, solidarity. If you get shot, you know, trying to rob someone for their meth, you go to your nearest biker pharmacist so he can pull out the bullet and stitch you up. The bikers in question in this gang actually promised that they weren't doing anything illegal when this guy got shot. He totally shot himself. But Bob Revere is a proud patriot, and because these guys are white, takes these meth-dealing idiots at their word, fixes them up, and, you know, gives them some painkillers and sends them on his way. This was an incredibly deep scene for me, personally. It showed the humanity, the well of humanity that Bob Revere has. What did it do for you?
It showed me that he has no regard for health or patient privileges or contacting the authorities.
Yeah, that is true. Bob goes home where his grandchild is there. This would be his son that died in Afghanistan. His son is there visiting his grandfather. He says hi to him, and the grandkid tries to, like, fist bump him. And Bob Revere's like, hey, that's not some L.A. gang handshake, is it? Which is incredibly fucking ironic, because he just got done helping out an actual gang member, like, remove a bullet from his stomach. So there's a bit of cognitive dissonance there, but I guess L.A. gang members wouldn't be white like that biker was. So, I don't know. It's a little questionable. What do you think?
Well, I think it's extra funny considering that his grandson, the actor, his last name is Gomez, so there's a little bit of extra layer of irony there. But I think it's also important to say what the name his grandson is given in this movie. Christian Revere.
Christian Revere, right. So I looked up this kid, Christian Revere, or his name is Hunter Gomez. I looked him up on IMDb because I hate him. His stupid his stupid fucking face is infuriating. And he's known for, in the credits here, doing episodes of Family Guy as Asian Kid.
Oh, boy. Great.
Let's go ahead and get into the meat of this movie. The Reveres are mad. They're angry because Christmas has been removed from this town so slowly they didn't realize it. These nosy people made them remove the cross from the courthouse and the Ten Commandments from the courthouse. And suddenly it's illegal to say Merry Christmas. And it's pretty fucked up. Bob himself was quoted by saying, people tried to pass laws to get rid of Christmas altogether. I don't think that actually happened, but according to Bob, it did.
In Fantasyland, it did.
And it did, yeah. So the widow of Thomas, when she returns home, she sees a cop who was friends with her husband when he was still alive, of course, and sees him in his uniform, like, being all cop-like, and then realizes she has an uncontrollable boner for authority and then bangs him immediately. Or I guess she didn't bang him immediately, but, you know, you can tell. You can tell. They're chaste and godly. So they probably ass bang because God can't see that. This kid, Thomas Revere, has to go to the principal's office at his school because he brought a small Gideon Bible. And the principal is not okay with that. Apparently that is against all the rules for a child to own a Bible that was hidden in his locker. This is a very sly piece of set design. I don't know if you noticed this here, but the principal has a dinosaur on his desk, so it's a very sly reference to his views that the world must not be, 2,000 years old, like the Bible promised. He's obviously an evolutionary, Darwinist, hellbound leftist.
If there's one thing that Last Ounce of Courage is, it's subtle.
Very much so. So Bob has to go pick up his grandson because he's committed the sin of hiding a Bible in his locker. And he believes that prayer was banned from the school, just like the Bible. Children cannot pray or own a Bible or any of that shit in school, which is, factually untrue. A wise black janitor appears and tells, Thomas and Bob that he believes that the school is filled with cowards because, they don't believe in any of this. They've gone godless. We're immediately treated to the next scene cuts over, and Bill O'Reilly is talking on the screen. Bill O'Reilly, the wife beater, of course, is talking about the war on Christmas, which is so fitting. And I wonder if he actually recorded dialogue for this film or if they just took it from a regular broadcast of Fox News. What do you think?
Well, it's obvious that they took it just from Fox News because it's poorly photoshopped onto the TV.
I wasn't watching that closely, I guess.
Yeah, it's blatantly obvious.
So, Bob is tossing and turning in his bed, and then he wakes up. He says he's got to do something. He goes to his garage and removes a giant American flag that he was using to just protect his filthy fucking motorcycle. Because if you're a patriot, you know that you can use a flag to, clean up the grease and oil from your motorcycle. It's fine. It's absolutely fine. So he decides to honor the death of his poor child by declaring a war on the war on Christmas. And at this point, it's actually revealed that Bob is also the mayor of the city. In addition to being a biker man and a pharmacist that helps out gang members, he's the mayor of this shitty little town. I think it's called Little Columbus or something like that. Do you remember?
Yeah, they forgot to mention that he was the mayor until about, 25 minutes into the movie?
At least. He decides that he's going to spread the message to the city of the town that it is not illegal to celebrate Christmas, as they had apparently believed all of these years. Which I will say, bad job, Mr. Mayor. You should probably let the people of the town know things.
What else is he hiding?
Yeah. We're taken back to the school where we see a overtly gay caricature of a drama director teaching these children to do a Christmas pageant that's all about aliens instead of, the actual Jesus parable. And it's ridiculous, and I don't want to focus my attention on this because it makes me super angry, not only because he's a terrible character, but because there are more children, more horrible children in this scene. I can't stress this enough. Every child in this movie is the worst person on earth. So people become in this town to get proud of themselves that they're saying Merry Christmas instead of Happy Holidays. And it gets to Washington, D.C. Word gets to Washington, D.C. We're introduced to Warren Hammerschmidt, played by the brilliant Fred Williamson, who will do anything for a dollar.
If people don't know the name, they'll remember him from Dusk Till Dawn. He was one of the big guys in the Titty Twister.
Yes.
And he helped out the main characters until he turned into a vampire himself.
Yes. Great, great actor. He's been in everything that you can think of. He plays an evil black man. he's from D.C., and he's trying to enforce the separation of church and state. Horror of horrors. That sounds awful. Bob is in a truck with a truck driver. Grandma got run over by a reindeer is playing on the radio. And Bob laments that no one plays real Christmas music anymore because apparently there's only one Christmas song that is a real Christmas song, as we find out later on.
And, I mean, there's literally multiple radio stations that play nothing but Christmas music from Thanksgiving until New Year's.
This whole movie exists in this weird Republican fever dream where these people that are completely middle class or upper middle class in an entirely white community have nothing to fear, so they have to create an enemy over this absurd notion that Christmas is being attacked by evil liberals.
We'll get into it. Let's go back to the movie.
All right, I am an evil liberal, and I want to attract Christmas, but there aren't enough of us out there that wants it, that can make anything happen. So, if I had it my way, I would absolutely jail you for trying to sing Silent Night at your children's musical. But I don't have any power, so it doesn't work out that way. So there's this weird subplot with these horrible children, and I can't stress this enough. They are the most grating, awful people in a movie filled with horrible, grating people. In which they decide to sabotage the what seems like a pretty fun space alien themed Christmas pageant and turn it to explicitly Christmas story. This is a thing that for some reason takes up like half the movie, and it's really not worth discussing.
No, it's just beyond. It's weird that a couple of middle school, early high school kids want to sabotage their school play to put forth the Christian message.
Yeah, they're horrible. Anyway, Bob is clearly, like, has his head up his entire asshole because he's getting more and more attention locally and nationally as he's doing more performative actions in favor of Christmas, and everyone's like, yeah, this guy's a patriot. And he's, like, clearly feeling his oats. He's all about himself. The scary black man, the hammer, gets a judge to order that the mayor takes down his Christmas decorations, and he refuses. So the federal government starts withholding money from some veterans thing that Bob had some kind of hand in. It wasn't really explained very well because this movie was written by morons. So if he can just take down those fucking Christmas decorations, this veterans group that, you know, supposedly needs money and healthcare, they can get the money they need to, you know, help out these guys. And considering that this is an overtly conservative movie, it's more important to display an impotent sign of power than it is to actually help out your fellow man by getting them the care that they need. So he keeps those fucking Christmas lights up. A saboteur actually knocks over the giant Christmas tree that he installed at the courthouse. And our evil man, the hammer, Hammerschmidt, starts putting out a news story that the mayor is actually not a Vietnam War hero. So this shakes the town to the core. This shakes his family to his core. And Bob tells his wife tearfully, there was one mission I never told anyone about. And the wise janitor finds his grandson, Thomas, and tells him, don't believe this. This isn't a true news story. Bob is actually brave as fuck. Like, he saved so many people in the war, but he actually accidentally killed a few people because he didn't follow direct orders. Again, I don't know why this is in the movie. I don't know why any of this is in the movie. None of this makes any sense.
And yet the movie was still made, and people watched it.
The mayor is fired by the city council, which is hilarious. A reporter questions his grandson about whether or not he's a war hero, and I wrote this down because it killed me. The kid replies, listen, lady, I don't know much about Christmas, and I don't pretend to, but why was this a line of dialogue? What is there to know about Christmas? He was asking about your grandfather being a war hero. So Bob,
this movie is two separate movies just kind of mashed together.
It is. So Bob bravely places a cross at the top of the courthouse, and you know, fortunately, the only cop in town is banging his daughter-in-law. So he like calmly arrests him. It's not a big deal. The townsfolk are stoked as fuck that like he put the cross up. Everyone's applauding him, and he's got to go to jail. A newscaster is reporting on this, and she decides to leave the broadcast because she's so inspired by Bob's actions that she's going to go look after her kids, you know, which is another hidden message, like women should be looking after the kids, not working. And then we go back to our pageant, and 365, I'd like you to cover this segment of it because this is something else. What happens in this pageant?
I think I blocked it out of my memory. I mean, don't they, like, try to go, oh, now I remember. Jeez, I think I have PTSD from this movie. Holy shit. So they start going through the little space play, and then eventually Christian Revere plays the last video cassette his father ever took while he's in Afghanistan, while his squad is hunkered down, and his father gives this little speech about freedom and love and fighting for what you believe in. And then a bomb hits where his father is. His father dies on camera, and yet somehow the camera survives, the tape survives, and it gets sent back all the way to America for his son to watch later in life.
Yeah,
and
so
this is shown in front of an entire audience of horrified people.
Yeah, so everybody gets to see an inspiring speech followed by a man getting just completely murdered on screen.
I laughed out loud.
I did too. But it inspires everyone. Everyone's stoked. Like, the kid is like, Merry Christmas, everyone. Which is like, you know, would be a play on Tiny Tim the Dickens tale. But like, no, this is actually meant to be like rubbing it in. Like, I'm saying Christmas and you can't stop me.
Take like, that, motherfucker.
Yeah, this is a movie for people that think eating at Chick-fil-A counts as like a form of protest, like sticking it to gay people by eating a fucking fried chicken sandwich. And it closes, okay, but before I begin, it closes with another Reagan quote, just in case you didn't get it. So, I don't know, man. My theory on this is that like throughout the movie, Bob is seen like watching Fox News, searching conservative news sites, listening to conservative radio. My theory is that like the film is actually a sick fever dream, like shows what happens when a man completely inundates himself in a victim mindset and decides that there is a war on Christmas and I've got to do something about it. The entire thing, takes place in his head. It's all Saint Elsewhere, you know?
It would have been awesome if at the very end of this movie, it just says directed by David Lynch.
Wow. He could have been using an alias for this.
What, Smitty? Isn't that the alias name? Alan Smitty?
Alan Smitty,
something,
yeah.
Something like that. Yeah.
So what did we learn from this movie, man?
I learned that no matter how much you don't fully understand the world around you, it doesn't matter as long as you get what you want. The movie proclaims to be all about freedom, 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 but it is only the freedom for the rich white Christian male. In the movie, he mentions, like, I don't care if, you know, a Jewish person has a menorah displayed in their house. And then he goes and puts a giant crucifix on, like, the courthouse building or, a public building. There's just so much cognitive dissonance throughout this movie that it really is mind-blowing and infuriating.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of bad movies in my life. I've seen movies that were poorly acted. I've seen movies that were poorly directed, poorly animated, poorly planned out in general. This movie is the most infuriating thing I've ever seen. It is a failure of man. If we were to go back and look and see where we did everything wrong, it starts with this film.
It is just blatantly wrong in so many different ways in so many different areas, and above all else, it is extremely hypocritical.
Yeah. So I'm gonna give this movie a negative 11 flaccid dicks out of 12.
Minus 666 out of 10.
Hail Satan, destroy
smoke crack, hail Satan, listen to Gigi Allen.
Yeah, all of these things are better options than watching this movie. So this was a tough one. We're gonna have a little more fun with our next film. We're gonna watch a trauma movie. If you guys aren't familiar, it's trash cinema for trash people, which we certainly are. And we're leaving it up to you which movie it is we're gonna watch. So beneath this media player, there is a poll you can vote on, and you decide which film we're watching for the next episode.
And if you're listening through iTunes, head on over to toiletofhell.com. We'll have the list set up. We'll also put it on Twitter as well, so people can stuff the ballot as much as they want. The movies are going to be... We split it up into five choices each. So, Joe, you picked Nerds of a Feather, Seduction of a Nerd, I'm getting a theme here, Getting Lucky, Rock and Roll Space Patrol, and Killer Nerd. So there's definitely a nerd theme. Okay.
I wanted to watch something with nerds.
And my five choices were Class of Nukem High 2, Toxic Crusaders the Movie, Rockabilly Vampire, Clown Camp Massacre, or Bloodhook. So it's up to you guys.
Yeah, vote early, vote often, and we'll have a good time. We got to close things down for this episode. I've had a great time. I hope you have as well. Follow us on Twitter at Joe Thrash and Kill, at 365 Days of Horror, at Toilet of Hell. And, man, let's have a good time. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
You're listening to 66.6 FM, Radio TOVH, The Flush.